With the 2020 U.S. Census due to begin in March, politicians in Berkshire County say an accurate count is vital for Western Massachusetts. The next census has been on the minds of Western Massachusetts leaders for months, if not years. Democratic State Senator Adam Hines.
When we're talking about the money that we receive from the federal government, it's based on numbers.
Pittsfield City Clerk Michelle Benjamin.
For every person that is counted, I believe there's over $2,000 in federal funding available.
Second Berkshire District State Representative Paul Mark, a Democrat, chairs the Massachusetts House Committee on Redistricting and represents 16 rural communities in Berkshire and Franklin County.
So as the chair of the House Committee on Redistricting, we've taken a lot of effort to try to support the census. The census is required in the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, and that section says there shall be an enumeration every 10 years, and that enumeration shall be for the purpose of apportionment of seats, of representative seats in Congress. And so at the state level, same thing. The number of seats don't change. We're fixed at 160 and 40 in the Senate. But the way that this political power is reallocated is dependent on these census numbers. And so what we want to make sure, and we're working in coordination with the U.S. Census itself and with Secretary Galvin, Secretary of State for Massachusetts, we're trying to ensure that Massachusetts gets the most accurate and complete count that we can possibly get. I mean, this affects, I believe the number is over $650 billion in state and federal aid. There are hundreds, literally hundreds of state and federal projects that are programs that are dependent upon census numbers. But then again, the apportionment and reallocation of political power, when you think of traditionally around the world, the way that maps have been drawn, the way that boundaries have been drawn, it's been based on warfare. And then we changed all of that here in the United States. We've created a system where we do it fairly, we do it openly, we do it transparently. We reallocate political power based on what have been the demographic trends, how has the population shifted every 10 years. And so as the committee, we want to make sure, again, we get the best numbers. We've secured money in the state budget to help assist Secretary Galvin. Secretary Galvin, there's a grant program available for the first time ever that will allow complete count committees, local organizations, community organizations to apply for funding to help them in their census efforts. And then as a committee, we've helped host, I think, 10 events around the state, all over the state, Cape, locally, Western Massachusetts. We're going to Worcester in a couple of weeks. We're going to New Bedford. We've been up on the North Shore. And so, again, it's just our intention is to make sure the count is complete and accurate, because that way when the census is actually done and those numbers are sent to us, we will be able to draw the most fair and accurate representative, Senate, and U.S. representative districts possible.
Do you foresee any major changes in representation for Western Mass in this coming census?
What we're seeing is that there's a significant amount of population growth in the eastern part of the state. So in Suffolk County alone, which is Boston and I think three other communities, the growth is about 11.8% based on the estimates right now. Here in Western Massachusetts, we're looking at either very slow growth or even in some places a small decline. The statewide average is about 5%. So the good news is we shouldn't be in danger of losing a member of Congress because the state as a whole has a good level of growth. But yeah, in Western Massachusetts, if our population isn't keeping up, it means our districts get bigger, which means we take on more communities both at the state level and at the federal level. And the bad news in that is while we always maintain as best we can a presence in each of the towns and try to make sure that everybody has the chance to access us and be heard from, the more towns I have, the more difficult it is for me to be somewhere. So if I go from 16 communities right now to 25, that means that's nine more towns. I have to get to know their select boards. I have to get to know their school committee members, and you have to make that much more effort. So it has a negative effect.
So earlier you talked about the $650 billion that are at stake for the census and how the government allocates that money based on these numbers. If you could break that down a little bit and make it a little bit more concrete for people, what are some things that are affected by that funding?
Sure. Chapter 90, which is how road money is distributed, that takes into account both population and mileage in the communities. So that's something that while in the rural communities we have the mileage to go by, the population numbers still hurt us. Education funding is determined per capita and per pupil. There's a lot. Community development block grants, the amount of dollars that flow through are largely based on these numbers. And I mean, the idea is when we come up with these formulas, everybody has people, every community can agree, every legislator can agree that we have people, we represent people. And so that kind of becomes a default way of allocating these resources. And so making sure that we aren't shortchanged, while we have fewer people than other parts of the state, it's just that much important for us to make sure that we got the best and most complete count that we possibly can. The lower numbers we face in the rural communities, though, brings us back to that Rural Policy Commission plan and making sure that while we know so many programs are based off of pure numbers, how do we add a rural factor? How do we make sure that there's some kind of a consideration that the fixed costs faced by rural communities is basically the same as anywhere else, including urban areas, but we just don't have the numbers to compete? So how do we add in some kind of a factor to consider for our rural areas?
You know, we're talking about this. It sounds like this very vast process, but on a basic level, you know, the day-by-day process of the census, what is it going to look like next year when it actually takes place?
So starting probably in March, notifications will be sent out by the U.S. Census Bureau itself. April 1st, 2020 is what is called Census Day. So the census is supposed to be a reflection of what is actually happening in the country on April 1st of next year. You have the option, and the census prefers that the census will be filled out online for the first time. There will still be options to fill it out by paper and to fill it out by telephone. There's going to be a lot of ways for people to get information. And once a couple of weeks pass, the census takes a look at, so who hasn't replied, who hasn't responded, and then census takers, traditional census takers, will still be making the rounds. The main census form is going to be smaller than it has been in the past, but it will be supplemented by some people will get long forms. And the census, I don't know when they started this, but does a more comprehensive count throughout the 10 years, in the middle of the 10 years. And so there's an American Community Survey numbers that happen all the time. We're actually going to get the next results of that on October 18th, so next week. But yeah, there'll be a lot of options. There will be census takers as well. And so in the lead up, and there's less than 180 days until April 1st, we'll be helping the census and helping Secretary Galvin every way we can to make sure people know this is coming, it's safe, it's secure, it's reliable, and it's really important.
So I speak with people who work with the immigrant community a lot, and there's a common refrain that there's a mistrust of being recognized by the government. So as far as reaching out to your constituents in your communities that you work with who are immigrants or people who are fearing reprisals from a government that has had a lot of mixed messaging on their role in our country, what do you say to that community, and how can you assure them that the count will be something that is indeed, as you say, safe?
When we do these events, the census partnership specialist that attends, her name is Georgia, she always makes it a point to express how safe the census is and what the penalties are for census workers. So there's significant criminal penalties personally that census takers need to be aware of. They sign an oath or a pledge that they will not reveal this data anywhere that it should not be revealed. And the pledge, I believe, is for the rest of their life. And there are significant criminal penalties if that is violated. So it is reiterated time and time again that the census, it is safe, it is secure, and I understand a lot of the things that the president has been talking about. I think it was intentional to put a chilling effect into certain communities. Don't let them win. Don't let them make you not be counted. It is so important that every person in this country is counted. This is intended to be a snapshot of what the country looks like, not for citizens. It is in the Constitution. It is called an enumeration. That means a number. They counted every person in the country back then. It's important that we do so today. So please, people, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, get involved in this process if there's any way you can, but please make sure you count, and please make sure we get the best count we possibly can for Massachusetts.
Second Berkshire District State Representative Paul Mark. Reporting from the WAMC News Berkshire Bureau at the Beacon Cinema, I'm Josh Landes.